Mercy Street, written by Tess Evans and read by Michael Veitch. He is surprised to hear the doorbell. Sherl and Redgum both have keys. Who else will be visiting it? He checks his watch. Nearly 3 o'clock in the afternoon. So instead of answering the door, he dithers about in his slippers and dressing gown and starts to wonder. Instead of wondering who is at the door, he wonders at a line of poetry from his fourth grade reader. He stood in his shoes and wondered. Or maybe it was wandered. But would you stand and wander? No, it must have been wondered. He jumps when the doorbell rings a second time. He'll have to be careful. These wandering thoughts might be an early sign of Alzheimer's. He does a quick hand check for tremors. Opening the door, he squints into the afternoon sun. Yes? You don't remember me, do you? It's the girl. At least she looks like the girl. In the lane, he says. We bet in the lane. Good grief. He made it sound as though they'd been formally introduced. He stares from the doorway, holding the dressing gown tight to his chest. Can we come in? She has a child with her, a waif with stringy yellow hair and wary eyes that narrow in a very unpleasant way when they meet his. He flinches at that judgmental stare before remembering his manners. Of course, come in. He gestures at the dressing gown. Excuse the clobber. Bed rest, doc's orders. Can't stay, the young woman says. Got a couple of things to do. That's a relief, thinks George, but feeling beholden, he mutters something conciliatory. The visitors are standing just inside the door. George goes to speak, but finds he has nothing to say. He scratches his chin. Perhaps he should thank her again. Don't want to stay with that man. The child, what would she be, 3, 4? George is no expert, clings to her mother's hand and slides up against her skirt like some animal seeking refuge. You got to. Auntie Bree can't look after you. What did she say? He must have misheard what she said. You're not expecting to leave that kid here. The sweep of his arm takes in the whole house from front door to back. Her reply is short, affectedly patient, even it seems, from her point of view, logical. I told you, Bree can't do it. Bree? What's it got to do with me? Poison toe? She's got to go to the doctor, so there's nowhere to leave the kid. George smarts at the exasperated tone, the patronising way she rolls her eyes. It puts him on the defensive. Watch your tone, young lady. Don't think you can treat me like I don't know what day it is. He doesn't say this aloud, but makes do with glowering over her head at the lamppost beyond the front gate. It requires some effort deciphering the young woman's shorthand. He's almost certain he doesn't know a Bree, but why would she think he did? And why should this Bree's poisoned toe lead them to his house with such a ridiculous request? Why here? Why me? Of course, he doesn't want to be responsible for this disagreeable child, or any child for that matter, but that's not the only thing. It's so unsuitable, not to mention dangerous. What could be so important that she would risk leaving her child with a stranger? Clutching his bruised ribs, he draws a painful breath and begins to sputter. You want to leave the kid here? With me?